court, the final case on the docket today is 2-25-0025, the people of the state of Illinois, and its appellant, Amy Rubin and Munoz, defendants at liberty. Arguing on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Katrina M. Kuhn. Arguing on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Terry Hedge.
All right, Ms. Kuhn, you may proceed when ready. Please feel free to adjust the microphone as needed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Katrina Kuhn. I represent the people of the state of Illinois. Good afternoon, counsel, and may it please the court. The trial court here committed reversible error when it dismissed Kane County's ongoing felony prosecution for DUI of defendant Ruben Munoz. Your Honors, I have three main points. My first point I will make briefly, and then I will go on to my second two points. This, Your Honors, have de novo review here. The trial court's holding regarding People v. Staple was legally incorrect. The people stand on their brief for the remainder of that argument. And my second point is that Staple is directly on point here. Staple is on all fours with this case. It's actually eerily similar. Felony and misdemeanor prosecutions ongoing at the same time.
Wait a minute. Isn't in Staple the misdemeanor and the felony were being prosecuted by the same prosecutor?
They were.
The state's attorney?
They were.
And it was just basically in one courtroom, a felony courtroom over here and a misdemeanor courtroom over here, and the assistant, when he's picked up on a warrant, says, no, we want to keep him separate, put this case over here and that case over there.
That is what happened in Vermilion County and Staple.
Right. So how is that the same on all fours as being in a village prosecution or city, I forget, but a local prosecutor and the state's attorney? How is that the same?
Our facts are even more favorable because there the prosecutor elected to keep them separate. The defendant knew they were separate. Here we had the prosecution of different charges by different attorneys from different offices. And as your honors know, the state's attorney enters into an agreement with attorneys to prosecute municipal offenses. And these are distinct cases that are set on different dates in different courtrooms. They're not always going to track each other. The fact is that they were still concurrent proceedings. They're not successive proceedings, which is when we get into the double jeopardy issue. In both cases, the defendant was aware of both cases going on. That's the key point.
Why?
For double jeopardy purposes. The defendant cannot claim ignorance. He cannot claim that he was taken by surprise. He appeared with separate attorneys on different court dates in different courtrooms. The facts in the people's brief set out a detailed timeline. Defendant could not have thought that these were one and the same case. He couldn't have thought that in Staple. They're happening in separate courtrooms. So defendant could not have thought that by pleading in one case, then he was free and clear of the other case. Defendant was kind of trying to argue that in the trial court, and unfortunately the trial court incorrectly accepted that argument. And the defendant in this case relies on Waller, Stefan, other cases that are clearly distinguishable. Those were cases where there were successive proceedings. The state in Waller and Stefan underwent one proceeding began a successive proceeding. For example, in Stefan, there was successive action. The defendant pled to a municipal ordinance regarding waste disposal. There were complaints in 1984. And then in 1986, the state decided to indict him under state law. That is the double jeopardy violation. That is not what happened here. Here we have, and it cannot be overreaching to charge a felony here when it could only have been charged by indictment. These proceedings.
Or information.
Or information, Your Honor, yes. But again, this whole case began when defendant received a traffic citation. The traffic citation then proceeded, and unbeknownst to the state, these proceeded concurrently, and that was never picked up upon. However,
is it your obligation to know that there's local prosecutions going on?
Your Honor, a felony state's attorney would not generally, as a matter of course, see this on their court call. They would not generally be notified, as a matter of course.
But they would generally know that the defendant was charged with a DUI in the municipality.
And wouldn't that knowledge be imputed anyway?
Well, and what happened was the state later charged the felony and the misdemeanor indictment in an indictment. The ASA and page 8 of the report of proceedings, the ASA forthrightly acknowledged that he, you know, was not aware when this was being argued in the motion to dismiss.
Because I think it's pretty well understood for an assistant state's attorney to be aware that if there's a DUI or an accident, that it's certainly possible felony charges could follow, and therefore you need to be careful about any deal you're making on a traffic ticket. It almost seems like the rule you're proposing is any concurrent prosecution is fine.
Well,
there's not going to be any don't worry about double jeopardy implications if it's concurrent.
No, Your Honor, I'm not arguing that as a general rule. I'm saying that in this case, there was no, there was clearly, you know, clearly this could have been handled better. But the Office of the State's Attorney is not overseeing the village prosecution. They're happening in different lanes. The village prosecutor is completely autonomous. Could the village prosecutor...
Completely autonomous?
Well, the State's Attorney is not really overseeing, you know, micromanaging the village prosecution. Could the village attorney have told the state's attorney that a misdemeanor plea was entered? Yeah, yes, certainly that could have happened. But we have to compare that to the knowledge of defendant and his counsel. Defendant appeared in both cases simultaneously, and that's what happened in Staple.
Well, wait a minute, are you suggesting that the defendant should, you know, come up to the assistant state's attorney and say, oh, by the way, you know, there's cases pending out in the village, and I'm going to go plead guilty to them? Is that
no,
the burden you're going to put
well,
on the defense?
Defendant's counsel certainly knew what was going on. Defendant appeared with separate attorneys on different courtrooms, and defendant knew that these were separate cases. He made speedy trial demands in both cases. He could not have thought that these were one and the same case.
They had two different people from this public defender's office, didn't they?
He did, but that's the same office.
I get it.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, Your Honor. Yes,
some
Your Honor,
of them are
true.
Very tight, and everybody works together, and others seem to operate somewhat autonomously.
Can I just ask, the CF was created, the file was created at the same time as the DT, correct?
On the same day, actually.
Is there no local rule requiring the DT to follow the CF?
I'm honestly not aware, Your Honor. I'm not aware of that, if that's the case or not. All of your points are well taken. This certainly could have been done differently. The bottom line is double jeopardy is not implicated here. Defendant pled guilty, jeopardy attached. That's jeopardy. Defendant is kind of skipping over the second part of a double jeopardy analysis, which is the second proceeding permitted? And that's where Judge Barsanti cut it off at the knees, which was, again, an error of law. The acceptance of a plea doesn't automatically raise a double jeopardy bar. Again, you know, a plea to a lesser offense is not an acquittal of a greater offense. And that is what Justice Holder White said in Staple.
But in this village prosecution where he pled guilty, every count was resolved. There was nothing left in the village prosecution, or did I misread the facts?
No, Your Honor. The village prosecution was the misdemeanor DUI, which I believe was two different grounds. A plea to a lesser offense is not an acquittal of a greater offense.
But there was no greater offense in that case.
No, but defendant was charged with the defendant was ongoing proceedings of
same,
a greater offense.
But it's the same incident.
This is the same thing that happened in the cases cited in my brief are Foster and Price, where there are lesser offenses. Price, I believe there was theft and official misconduct. The defendant pled to theft before the trial, and then the jury found her official misconduct. That was not a double jeopardy violation. The state could go forward.
It didn't resolve all the counts in Price. Pled guilty to one, second one proceeded. Right?
But double jeopardy does not prevent the state from prosecuting multiple offenses on the same act.
The point I'm trying to make is the village prosecutor has an event, files whatever charges they're going to file. A plea agreement is entered into that resolves all the pending matters. What is left to be prosecuted?
At that point, there was a felony indictment that had been filed in its separate case for the same act.
Well, let me ask you this. Isn't it your obligation to know what other charges are out there pending on your, on an, I'm not your, but I didn't mean your, on an event?
Again, Your Honor, this, as in Staple here, the prosecution even elected to keep the cases separate, and that was not found to be a
right, but that was all state's attorney. That was not a village prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
One office, one prosecutor,
right,
theoretically with assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Very different than the fact pattern here.
Two
autonomous prosecutors. One makes a deal. Why is that not binding on the other?
Well, as Your Honor just said, they are autonomous. They're not. Again, you know, they weren't bound in Staple. They're not binding here because they're still pending felony proceedings. And what would happen is. Again, Your Honors have to keep in mind that defendant here is not subject to successive legal actions. He also is not subject to multiple punishments because unlike Brenner and Hall and the cases on which defendant relies, this is the same county. They would merge. The DUI and the felony and misdemeanor would merge. So if this is sent back for felony DUI proceedings, defendant is not subject to multiple punishments. That was not the case in Brenner and Hall, where there were two different counties. Then those counties would have to coordinate, and they cannot merge two convictions in two separate counties. Again, that distinguishes the case law. And if we're looking at the case law, this is the case law is clearly on the people's side. We have Staple. We have Waller, which was fully distinguished in the people's brief, the people's reply brief. Fully distinguished. Those are successive prosecutions, and defendant relies heavily on Waller. Again, the people did not here try to bring a different action after a guilty plea. And the people were not trying to prosecute charges seriatim. There was no prosecutorial overreach. This was not a case where Kane County tried to prosecute a felony after the conclusion of a misdemeanor case, which is a clear double jeopardy issue. This is not a case where the county was honing its evidence against defendant and trying to, you know, test out a theory. This was a case where the defendant pled that jeopardy attached, and then defendant went in, tried to use the sword of double jeopardy to dismiss the felony prosecution. That is what happened in Staple. That is not what double jeopardy is for.
Counsel, to what extent does a municipal prosecutor to what extent are they coextensive with a state's attorney? In other words, the state's attorney appoints, or at least issues a letter appointing them to prosecute certain types of cases, correct?
Yes.
So is not that authority akin to appointing someone as an assistant state's attorney for purposes of prosecuting those types of cases?
It is. That they are kind of a subcontractor, so to speak. However, again, you know, my understanding is that this is not something that the state's attorney is entering into an agreement with the village to prosecute municipal offenses. So the state's attorney's office is not, you know, micromanaging that or, you know, overseeing it.
Right.
They're kind of leaving it to them to take care of these, and we'll take care of the felonies.
Right. And, well, so what I'm getting at, and I apologize, I should have addressed this earlier. The motion to supplement the record is denied. We'll consider Staple on its own terms. But in this case, To what extent do you think it makes a difference that the defendant here agreed to an offer from the prosecutor? It's not an open plea case like Price and the Johnson case.
It doesn't really make a distinction here. And what is important here is that there was a plea, you know, whether it was open or not, there was a plea to which jeopardy attached, and there's not a double jeopardy violation here.
Because you're saying there's not a second prosecution?
Correct. Correct.
What about, and the fact that someone has pled guilty is an admission to all of the facts that are alleged in the case.
For example, here, the misdemeanor plea. He pled guilty to misdemeanor DUI. He pled guilty to committing a DUI on that offense. The felony DUI was based on, you know, it was his second DUI. That's what got him into the felony. So really, the felony DUI is essentially proven now. There's no real second proceeding that's even going to happen. May I conclude? There's no real second proceeding that's even going to happen. So again, this how can defendant be caught by, you know, by surprise or taken or prejudiced in any way, to use it for lack of a better term, for having already admitted to committing misdemeanor DUI?
Well, admitted in exchange for a certain outcome, right? And so now what you're saying is that agreement is out the window, but you've also admitted to every element that we need in the felony.
Yes, because, again, this is not the state. Again, this is, defendant is not allowed to defeat this on double jeopardy terms. He may defeat it on other terms, but this is not a case where the state is doing successive prosecutions. Again, that is the people's position.
Yeah, but what other terms would he defeat it on? He's admitted to everything that the state needs to prove in the felony.
What I'm saying is at the point that this was argued in the trial court, mm-hmm. you know, he sought to stop the felony prosecution in its tracks when he had a chance to plead to the misdemeanor. And again, that is Staple discusses that, and you know, when defendant has knowledge of both things going on, that is key. That is key. This was not something that was.
But the prosecution also has knowledge of both of them, and it's imputed. I mean, the state's attorney appoints the municipal for that purpose. The municipal has knowledge. The state's attorney, in this case, certainly had actual knowledge mm-hmm. of the DT cases pending. When they indicted, and this is over the course of, I think, about 5 months.
Your Honor is saying that the state's attorney had knowledge of the misdemeanor cases?
Right.
Yes, but they didn't have knowledge that a plea was pending, and defendant went in, exactly as in Staple, went in and pled and then said, okay, I'm done. And, you know, yeah, if I had a choice, I would have done that too. But that is not a violation of double jeopardy.
Okay. Any further questions?
No.
All right. We'll address further arguments
yes.
in rebuttal.
Yes.
And Mr. Gosch, you may proceed when ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kerry Getch, and I represent the appellee, Ruben Munoz. The state made a contract with Mr. Munoz, and really the only reason we're here is that the state is trying to alter the terms of that contract unilaterally. They want to offer a plea to a misdemeanor DUI and now pursue charges of felony DUI based on the exact same event. Judge Barsanti was correct, and I'd like to address this a little bit. The state says it's de novo review, but one factual finding that Judge Barsanti made that is afforded deference is that nothing tricky happened in this case. There was no surreptitious activity by Mr. Munoz. He accepted a plea deal from the state. It's the same sovereign. The deal applies to both the state's attorney and the village, that is the same sovereign, for purposes of the deal. It's not explicitly stated on the record, but it's clear what happened here. There was no communication between the two sets of prosecutors. The state concedes that the village and the state are the same sovereign, and that should really end the analysis because the state is bound to the contract that it made with Mr. Munoz. The state also doesn't really get into the fact that any purported error in this case was invited by the state.
Can you back up a second? How are they the same sovereign?
Well, that's what Waller stands for. The state of Illinois mm-hmm. has the prosecuting authority, and that is dished out via various state's attorneys. Mm-hmm. And then, as you pointed out, the state's attorneys then allow the village prosecutors to do some of these prosecutions.
But does the village prosecutor have authority to resolve a felony?
Well, they didn't resolve a felony.
That's not the question.
They have the authority to prosecute DUIs, and it's the exact same event. So they have the authority to prosecute in this case, yes.
Okay.
It's the same. Waller stands for the concept that the ASA can't come in after the village is already prosecuted. And the state makes a deal about when the charges are brought, but the charges are irrelevant for jeopardy purposes. Jeopardy doesn't attach when you're charged. It attaches, well, if you're having a jury, it attaches when the jury is brought in and voir dire. But, I mean, what matters for purposes of jeopardy are trials, sentences, things of that nature. It's not when you're charged. And, in fact, in Brenner, the charges were brought on the same day. And this court should follow Brenner. The state makes a distinction, well, an indictment came after the plea. Well, the information came the same day as the traffic tickets in Brenner. And so there is no real distinction here. The state also points out, well, they're different counties. Well, that actually sort of forgives them more than it does here, where it's the exact same county. Everything's, like, they should be communicating. It's understandable that one county might not know what's going on in the other, but this court found in Brenner that that doesn't excuse what happened. And in fact, Brenner really got it right. They point out, and the state is trying to make this seem nefarious, but the defendant can avoid a harsher punishment is a basic, common, and acceptable consequence of the prohibition against double jeopardy. And that's what Brenner says. This happens all the time in pleas. Of course you're going to take an advantage of a situation. And they're also imputing knowledge to the defendant that he just frankly doesn't have. Do you think the defendant knew that by pleading to a misdemeanor that double jeopardy might? I mean, his attorney certainly might. But the defendant isn't. I mean, the state knows it. The defense attorney knows it. But the defendant doesn't know it. So the fact that the defendant knew there were two cases going on, I mean, he's juggling it however he can. And when his attorney advises him, hey, take this deal, the state is offering you a deal to a misdemeanor when you're facing a felony, yes, I'll take it.
How do you distinguish Staple?
There's no plea agreement in Staple. There's no, if you control F on the document of Staple, the words negotiated and agreed do not appear. And here we have a negotiated plea. The state concedes there was a negotiated plea. And I apologize for getting it wrong in my brief. I actually mixed up the defense attorney and the prosecutor. But it actually makes the statement even more compelling because the prosecutor exactly lays out the terms of the deal. And so Staple doesn't really apply here. And it also goes back to the fact that Judge Barsanti found that nothing, quote-unquote, tricky happened here, which is what happened in Staple. Staple said it was a surreptitious plea. The defendant in Staple had absconded for 3 years. He was trying to avoid responsibility. You don't have that here. You've also pointed out that it was a single prosecutor. And one of the distinctions between Price and Foster in a case like this, is that Price and Foster, it was a set of charges that were all being prosecuted by at the same time. And in Price, they didn't even sentence the defendant until after they prosecuted the offenses, the greater offense. In Foster, the main holding was that it wasn't a lesser-included offense. But again, in Foster, there's no evidence of an actual plea deal. which is what we have here. If the state is right about Staple, then I think this court should find that Staple was wrongly decided. It runs it against the contract principles of negotiated pleas, and it also violates Waller in that it's allowing a state's attorney to prosecute after the municipality. I'd like to point out, I don't know if I did already, but in Staple, when they distinguished Brenner, they did not notice that the information was issued on the same day as the, they also point, the court points to the timing of the indictment, but the charges were already filed via information. So that distinction that Staple makes of Brenner is actually inaccurate. I guess to conclude, Johnson and in turn Staple, they stand for the principle that the state gets, quote unquote, one full and fair opportunity to convict. They got that in this case when they negotiated a plea with Mr. Munoz. Accordingly, we ask that this court affirm Judge Barsanti's decision dismissing the felony DUI charges.
Is there any obligation of the state's attorney to know what the village is doing or for the village to notify the state?
Absolutely. That was sort of a point that Brenner addressed. I have a quote here. There can be little sympathy for the state when its subordinate instrumentalities fail to cooperate. The defendant should not lose the constitutional right against double jeopardy simply because he outmaneuvered the state. I mean, it's the exact same scenario. You fail to communicate, that's on you. And, I mean, the state is complaining that the defendant knew there was two proceedings. Again, the defendant is not sophisticated, but the state knew just as well. The village, frankly, probably wanted the money. They want their fine. And when the state says, well, everything will merge, is the village going to get the money back? What about the community service hours? How do you take those back? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Does the village prosecutor have the authority to resolve all the pending cases?
Yes, all the cases in front of it. If one then implicates double jeopardy, that's on the village prosecutor. I mean, this is exactly what happened in Waller. The municipality charges a lesser. He pleads and, I mean, the timing of the prosecution is different. But this prosecution hasn't been resolved either. The idea that this isn't a successive prosecution, they haven't prosecuted him for the felony yet because they can't. But it's still successive prosecutions. It doesn't matter when the charge is brought. But Waller stands for the fact that the municipality resolves a misdemeanor. The state then can't come in and charge a felony or prosecute the felony.
Well, that's a significant distinction. Can they file charges or can they not just proceed to trial?
I mean,
so your position would be that after the plea in the village, they cannot proceed to trial on the greater offense.
Correct.
Or any other offense, for that matter.
Any offense implicated by
the facts of that.
Right. Correct.
And is that because of the subordinate or coordinating agency for which they're responsible and which they empowered made a deal on a lesser included?
Correct. If I make a deal with a credit card company, my wife is basically bound by that same deal because we are co-sovereigns of our household. That would be the analogy. I mean, if you have power of attorney and you enter into a deal, the person that you have power of attorney over is bound by that deal. It's no different. I mean, I don't see why the state can say that the assistant state's attorney has more authority than the village. They don't for purposes of DUI prosecutions. They're the same exact entity. In fact, it should probably be the village prosecutor in here arguing against the state because the village prosecutor made the deal. Mr. Munoz just accepted it. I mean, the warring parties in this aren't Mr. Munoz and the state. It's the village prosecutor and the state.
Mm-hmm.
They should have communicated.
How, if your position is adopted, how are we not encouraging gamesmanship in these types of cases?
Frankly, gamesmanship occurs all the time. But the way you solve that problem is you have the village prosecutor communicate with the state's attorney
mm-hmm.
for DUIs. I mean, it wasn't like the charges came and then the plea was immediate. Both these cases were proceeding. Or you have the state's attorney say, we've got felony charges, we're taking over the DTs. I mean, there's plenty of ways to avoid this. This doesn't happen very often. It happened in Staple largely because he absconded, probably. There was trickery. There was no trickery here.
All right, thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Ms. Kuhn, you may proceed when ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have several things to cover, so I will try to be brief. First of all, Your Honor, if I may just address, I understand Your Honors have denied the motion to supplement the record, and we respect that ruling. Just wanted to point out that we're moving to supplement the record to correct significant factual errors in the defendant's argument. He was speculating when he was arguing whether there was or was not an agreement in Staple.
We understand that, counsel. Okay,
yes,
we'll treat that accordingly.
Thank you, Your Honor. The second point I wanted to make is that Waller, in fact, is correctly decided. It is clearly distinguishable. I wanted to point out that in my brief, in my reply brief, I did mistakenly say the Florida Supreme Court was being reversed by the United States Supreme Court. It's actually the Florida Appellate Court. But what was necessary for the United States Supreme Court to say in Waller is that the Florida Appellate Court was wrong to allow the state to bring a separate action after the conclusion of a municipal action. That was wrong in Waller. That fact is omitted from defendant's discussion in Waller. That is what the holding is in Waller. And again, that's clearly distinguishable from what we have here. Judge Barsanti, I believe when he made his ruling on October 4th, it would not be the end of the felony DUI. He said on the October 4th record, I'll dismiss the DUI count. I understand that was just one count. The public defender said, yes, Judge, and the court said the rest of the counts would still be alive. So I believe that he didn't, he missed the fact that he was understanding that the rest of the counts could still continue, and they could still continue. And as far as the same sovereign issue.
Can I ask that?
Yes, ma'am.
Why did you appeal? Am I misreading this? I hear you saying we really got a favorable ruling from Judge Barsanti because he said the felony charges are still alive.
No, I must have misspoken, Your Honor. I was simply trying to say that Judge Barsanti dismissed the felony DUI counts. I think that maybe he was thinking that the rest of the counts would survive. I think he was not understanding the effect of his ruling. The other point that the people would like to make is that if this court was going to affirm the trial court, it would be issuing an order or an opinion in direct conflict with Staple. And Staple was not wrongly decided. The main point of the defendant's argument on that point is Waller. And again, we've clearly distinguished Waller. And defendant here knew that there were two cases going on. Should defendant himself be charged with having this knowledge and being up on the rule and the law about double jeopardy? No, but his defense counsel surely should be.
Wait a second. So defense counsel is not in this room. He is or she is not a party to this case. How do we place burden on a defense counsel whose job it is to represent his client and take advantage of every opportunity presented by the state. We should not hold that against counsel. That's what counsel is supposed to do.
Your Honor, Your Honor's point is understood. However, double jeopardy, when it comes to double jeopardy, defendant is using this as a sword. Defendant is not using this. Defendant would be certainly be permitted to use it as a shield if the court, if the state came later and tried to say, okay, you've already pled in misdemeanor. Now we're not satisfied with that. Now we're going to bring felony charges. That's not what happened here. This was, again, this could have been tried differently. It wasn't. But, again, defendant is trying to use this as a sword and not a shield.
He made an agreement. Tell me why you, I keep saying you and I do apologize, the state's attorney's office is not responsible for the totality of what was done in the village. And so if an agreement is authorized, isn't that implicitly a resolution of the case, not parsing out the counts? And I do note in a lot of these cases where double jeopardy is applied, the plea in question resolved all the pending matters in that case. So if you've given, again, the state's attorney has given authority to the village prosecutor to resolve the case, and he resolves all the counts, why is not that the end of all charges that could have been or have been brought out of that set of events?
Because at that point there was currently pending felony prosecution, currently pending at the time. And the fact, and again, the village is not, you know, that did not bind the prosecution.
Why not? If you said he was, that the village prosecutor is autonomous. You've said, I think you called it, they were, anyway, autonomous, and that there is a sort of a subcontractor and some type of relationship. Why aren't you bound by what the village prosecutor does? I guess that's what I kind of keep coming back to. If you give them the authority to resolve it, and they resolve it, there's a totality agreement. Everything is resolved.
Well, even in Staple, where the prosecutor elected to keep them separate, they were not bound by that. And
same
Staple
prosecutor,
either.
Same state's right. attorney's office. This is two different. Two different offices.
Right. Which
two different.
To me, but benefits the state, because this, how can the state, you know, again, in Staple, they were the same prosecutor. They're binding each other. Here, we have two separate entities, two separate prosecutions, and defendant is aware that both are going on, and that was a key in Staple. Defendant was
and
aware.
So is the state, right?
Yes, but defendant is bringing, defendant is, again, defendant is using double jeopardy to stop an ongoing felony prosecution. That is not what double jeopardy is for.
How about we look at it as that the defendant has taken advantage of an offer to plead guilty to a misdemeanor to resolve the matter, to resolve the case. No matter what else it's pending.
When he argued that then he could dispose of the felony prosecution based on double jeopardy, he would be incorrect if he argued that these were, that he would be subject to multiple punishments. He is not.
Okay. May I ask a question?
Yes.
Would it have mattered if, you know, according to you, state's attorney has no responsibility to monitor what his contract, his or her, depending, prosecutor is doing, and they're just proceeding along, and the village case being a misdemeanor gets to trial ahead of time. Defendant sits through a trial. Maybe he's found guilty. Let's assume he's found not guilty. Then what?
Well, that would be an acquittal, and that would be then if the people then brought us a charge after that.
Well,
that would,
I'm not talking about
okay.
that. I'm talking about what we have now, according to you, which is, you know, they're just proceeding along each their merry way. And the defendant, you seem to think or ascribe some kind of trickery to him getting a deal, taking a negotiated plea. If he didn't do that and he sat through a jury trial and was either found guilty or acquitted, would it matter?
The defendant would have a better double jeopardy argument there.
Why?
Because then the state would have then been allowed to, you know, test its evidence against the defendant. You know, again, that would be, he would have a better argument. Here, he pled to a lesser offense, which is not an acquittal of the greater offense. And that is not, although jeopardy did attach, jeopardy would attach in your hypothetical, it did attach here.
They do say, though, that jeopardy attaches when a plea is accepted.
Yes. Yes, jeopardy attaches. That doesn't, that's the first part of the analysis. And second part is, is a second conviction or a second proceeding, so to speak, does that violate double jeopardy? That's the second part of the analysis. And Your Honor,
and you said, well, if he sat, if he went to all the trouble to sit through a bench or jury trial against him, then he'd have a better double jeopardy argument than he has here.
Well,
I'm not sure I understand why, but I hear what you're saying.
Again, Your Honor, you know, double jeopardy prevents the state from bringing one, you know, trying a case one time and maybe not liking the way it happened and not, you know, then they can't say, okay, we want a do-over. You know, that would be a case where you have, if you have a trial. That is not the case. You know, a plea, there are different protections for a defendant, and there's case law on that, when whether it's an acquittal or a plea, as far as double jeopardy goes.
No. All right, thank you very much, counsel. We will take this matter under advisement, issue a ruling in due course, and we will adjourn for the day.